Then it tells us in chapter 2 verse 14, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purity, purify for himself his own special people, zealous for good works. Now in chapter 3, he emphasized good works even more. Chapter 3 verse 1, to obey, to be ready for every good work. And he re-emphasized that again in verse 8. This is a faithful saying, and these things I want you to affirm constantly, that those who have believed in God should be careful to maintain good works. So here we have good doctrine and good works. Good doctrine in chapter 1 and chapter 3, good works. What is the emphasis here? Without good doctrine, you never have good works. Now, he's not just emphasizing on works. Pay close attention, he qualified it. It is not just works. He's talking about good works. And he qualified what good involves in chapter 1 and 2. In chapter 1, he talks about good doctrine. In chapter 3, he talks about good works. Chapter 2 is in between them, which will give part of the answer. How did good doctrine become good works? But let's look at the relationship first. Paul makes it very clear. How everyone will have works. If you do something in life, you have works. But how good our works depend on how good and sound our doctrine is. In other words, just like one old Baptist preacher I heard in seminary, and I think he's still around today, he likes to make this statement. He says, theology breeds methods. Unless we have good teaching and good doctrines, our works will not be that good. Good doctrine produces good works. So the starting of good works is actually in the doctrine, in the teaching. When we begin to know where we are, know where we stand, we begin to understand God and understand His Word, and we are able to launch into good works. The second emphasis that we need to make sure that we get it here is that looking over here in chapter 3 verse 5, not of works of righteousness which we have done. In other words, it's not works in order to earn merit with God. But good works is in Christianity is different from good works in traditional religious teaching. Traditional religious teaching says this, and it's in the heart of many people who do not know God, that one day, somewhere in eternity, you will have your good works weigh with your bad works, and on that scale, it depends on which is more, and then you will enter. So good works become works of righteousness to earn salvation or merit. That's not what the Bible teaches. That's what tradition and religious tradition teaches. So we do works in order to earn merit. But the Bible tells us we are saved by grace. But then grace doesn't stop there. Look at Ephesians 2 verse 8. Grace doesn't stop there. In Ephesians chapter 2 verse 8, it says here, for by grace you have been saved through faith, and not of yourself, it is the gift of God. In verse 9, not of works. Now that is same like 3rd chapter of Titus. Not of works of righteousness. Not of works, lest anyone should boast. But it didn't stop there. It continued in verse 10. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for, what's the word there? Good works. Do you notice that they differentiate in verse 9 between works and good works? It says not of works, but we are created for good works. What are good works? Now here is some of the definition. Verse 10, chapter 2, Ephesians. They are works which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. There are 2 points there. Number one, they are things that have been planned by God, not by us. The word beforehand speaks about even before we were born. There are things that are in God's heart and in God's book for our life. Number two, it is not something that we do in that physical sense alone, although of course when you do it, it comes out. But it says, you walk in them. It's like God made it all there, and you walk into them. You walk into them. For us to walk in it. Good works is not a struggle. If you struggle, it is not the good works God is talking about. Good works is a walk. Of all forms of exercise, the easiest form is walking. Walking. When you see a person jogging or running, they will have to stop sometime. They will be panting. But when you walk, there are many different paces, a different velocity, but a normal walk doesn't tire you. It refreshes you. It sure refreshes you. And there is no struggle, there is a rest in walk. So all this needs to be qualified. Otherwise, when we get this teaching and you end up with number three, oh yeah, I want to be mature, I want to do good works. And you go back to your church, come on church, we must mature. Tomorrow, today, the church, tomorrow, the world. And you launch into good works, and all your church members struggling. Oh, they're struggling. They open up of orphanage, and they one lady trying to handle 20 children. And you open an old folks home, but nobody take care of them. A young man who is like a military army commanding all of them. Tension! All the old folks got tension. Something wrong. It's not just doing it for the sake of doing it or doing it for the sake of proving something. Maturity is something that comes by growth. Achievement and success is something that comes by works. But we're talking about maturity. Maturity comes by growth. So here the good works that he's speaking about definitely is a different set of good works. Is the good works. If the good works are number one, prepared by God, number two, something to walk in them, then we see it's logical that chapter 1 of Titus say we must understand God, we must have good doctrine. Now the question comes, what is the definition of the Bible definition of good doctrine? What does it bring? What does it cover? Because in our modern church age and in our Bible schools, we have so many definitions for good doctrine. And what is good doctrine for one is not good doctrine for another. And what is the normal practice for one is an extreme practice for another. So, do we have principles to define and qualify good doctrine? Yes. Chapter 2 of Titus. Verse 7 qualifies what it is. In all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. Now, what is the goal? The pattern of good works. And then he described what the pattern of good works is. He says, in doctrine. And that's the same doctrine he's talking about now, that he mentions in chapter 1. And he says that some people without this doctrine, in chapter 1 verse 16. You notice, some people without this doctrine, this kind of sound doctrine or good doctrine, and they profess to know God, but in works they deny Him. See what's the problem? They claim to have some doctrine, but in the works it doesn't really come out the way it should. The fruit doesn't show. So how do we prevent that? Because in Christianity, which has so many denominations and so many emphases, and just like out in the world, one man's food is another man's poison. In Christianity, one group's doctrine is another man's heresy. How do we define? Right, the Bible defines in chapter 2, verse 7. In doctrine, and here are these three definitions. Number one, integrity. Integrity means that any doctrine that is sound and of God, and any theology, will produce character. And of course you can explore what the word character is in the Bible. We don't have the whole night to do that, otherwise we could. Right? There are Bible, you look at the word character and you can study all what it means. Meekness, love, peace, humility, and all those things. Like in Romans 5, they have some, and here they have some, and everywhere they have some area of character. But integrity means that it develops a person's character. And I would question any offshoot or any group or any extreme group in Christianity that suddenly come up with any teaching, and instead of producing a group of people with integrity and character, they produce a group of people who are rash, proud, abusive, and divisive. I question their doctrine and their theology. We have a right, because the Bible defines what good sound doctrine will produce and what it contains. It produces, number one, it has, number one, integrity. It produces character. Number two, it produces reverence. Now, reverence here is in twofold. Reverence for God and reverence for people. For people who are in authority, or respect for the for people. So if a theology or sound doctrine doesn't produce a reverence for God, something is wrong. If a theology or a so-called doctrine does not produce respect for authority or respect for people, something is wrong. Now with these principles, you can definitely tell, like some cults, right? Like the recent one that's in America. If you look at theirs, you can see that they already fail on number one, integrity. Because the leader of their cult start taking all the other people's wives. What kind of character is that? And you can see that he does every sin. And you can see on the second point here of reverence, that he does not produce a respect for the authorities of the land. Instead, he fosters rebellion. That's not God. So we can see that all sound doctrine, and the people who are in that, should have straight away seen. And if there are evidences of that, then you could judge that it's not good doctrine. Then we see in verse 7, chapter 2, incorruptibility. What's that? Good doctrine produces spirituality that is in the world but not of this world. Corruption means being polluted by the things of this life. If it's a really good doctrine, it will not produce more worldly people. You can see, obviously, some of these cults, they produce worldliness. I mean, the people involved either get caught up by the things of this world, distractions become the main goal, the things of this life become the main goal, and there's something wrong with the theology. Either it's a bit upended and it's not balanced, or it's just wrong. So a good doctrine must produce